Welcome to Heal California, your place for news and views on the California Medicare for All movement and the people making it happen. I'm your host, Edward Barrera. We'll kick off today's show with news, followed by the first in a series of interviews on Medicare for All costs. Today, we're joined by Dr. James Kahn, Professor Emeritus of Health Policy, Epidemiology, and Global Health at UC San Francisco. Enjoy the show. Up next, our interview with Dr. James Kahn. Keep up with the movement at our website, heal-ca.org, where you can follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and subscribe for email updates and upcoming podcasts. Today, our guest is Dr. Kahn, an expert in health economics, cost-effectiveness analysis, health services research, and policy. Dr. Kahn, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Over the past few years, interest in single-payer or Medicare for All has been growing tremendously, and for good reason. According to a recent study, U.S. life expectancy is the lowest among developed nations and projected to drop even more by 2040, while our spending is the highest.
That is correct. We have by far the highest spending among the wealthy democracies in the OECD, Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. And we have the worst health statistics, including the shortest lifespan. And moreover, in the last year or two, we've actually seen a drop in lifespan. That is something that has not been seen for many decades in any of the other wealthy democracies in the OECD.
In 2016, SB 562, a single-payer plan called the Healthy California Act, was passed by the California Senate. Single payer is a healthcare system in which a public agency pays all the medical bills. The doctors and hospitals remain largely private. The Healthy California Act was a plan which would have covered all Californians with much more comprehensive coverage for much less money than we spend now. One of the top questions people always have about single payer is how can it possibly save money if it offers more coverage like vision and hearing while at the same time expanding coverage to everybody? Now, there were studies done of SB 562. One of them was by a team at UMass Amherst, headed by Dr. Robert Polin. There was another one done by the California Senate. The number $400 billion kept coming up, appearing to both prove and disprove that SB 562 would save money. You spent a career looking at the cost side of healthcare in the United States. Can you talk about these studies for a moment? Were the studies actually consistent with each other?
Well, the studies were consistent with each other in the sense that they both estimated that we spend about $400 billion per year on healthcare in the state of California. That is well known from our regular tracking of healthcare spending. So the $400 billion number doesn't mean much in and of itself in terms of the effects of single payer. That's simply our starting point. So the two studies are very different beyond that $400 billion number. The Polin study was done using well-accepted methods for doing these kinds of economic analyses. They looked at how many people in California are underinsured and how many are uninsured and how providing comprehensive coverage to everyone would increase utilization of services and therefore the costs of services, and then balance that against the kinds of savings that can be expected with single payer. Most importantly, we spend about 18 cents on the healthcare dollar for administration of the billing process. And about two-thirds of that or more could be saved by switching to single payer. So that's a huge savings. That's more than 10% of the $400 billion. We also could save on the cost of drugs, which, as everyone knows, are quite high and much higher than any other country in the OECD. And using some of the techniques they've used, you can save a lot there as well. There are a couple of other small savings, but when you add all of this together, the increase in cost because people are covered better and the savings due to having a more efficient system and one where we're paying fairer prices for drugs, you end up with a net savings. And in fact, the Polin study did find that.
So with single payer, we could save over 10% just by simplifying the billing process. and we could get even more savings by controlling the cost of medicines like other countries do.
The Poland study also found that if we are effective at reducing medical waste and fraud, which has long been a goal of the policy community, we can obtain even further savings. That's hard to do, especially in the current system, where the data available to us to root out the fraud and waste, is very mixed and complicated. But under single payer, the kind of data we would have on how health services are delivered would be far better and might give us a real chance to achieve that kind of efficiency without in any way hurting medical care. In fact, we would probably improve medical care by getting rid of that fraud and waste. Now, in contrast, the study done for the Senate Appropriations was just literally a couple of pages of explanation with some somewhat mysterious assumptions about how they were doing their work. They didn't show their calculations. Honestly, it just wasn't a serious economic study. And somehow or other, they came up with an estimate that the spending might go up a little bit, but they didn't credit the administrative savings. They acknowledged that they would happen, but they simply didn't put them into the equation. So from my standpoint as a health economist, I wasn't at all pleased with their methods or the way they reported it. And I don't take the report seriously as a result.
In other words, the Senate Appropriations study is incomplete compared to the Poland study because it basically leaves the savings out of the equation. No wonder there was confusion about it. Now, let's get beyond percentages and talk about actual cost in dollars.
Let me give you a few of the numbers from the Poland study. Using the best available data, that study estimated that the current spending on healthcare in the state of California, actually in the year 2017, so the most up-to-date data at the time this report was released, was about $368 billion each year. With the added coverage provided by single payer, and therefore more people have access to care and utilization goes up, all else equal, you would expect to see an increase to about $404 billion. So that's obviously more spending. But then when you factor in the savings due to the administrative simplification, which decreases the amount by 10% or so, and then further increases, and then the additional savings due to lower drug prices, you get down to about $351 billion. So that's less than current spent under the current system. If you, in addition, can achieve some savings around fraud and waste, you can bring that down further into the range of $330 to $335 billion. So even though there's a bit of uncertainty in what we can achieve, clearly we will be spending less under single payer, according to the Poland study.
All right, let me get this straight. The Poland study showed California spends about $368 billion a year. If we were to pass the Healthy California Act, those costs would drop to about $330 billion a year thanks to reduced administrative and drug costs and reduced fraud and waste. That's a drop of $38 billion a year. So instead of single-payer costing us $400 billion a year, we could actually save $38 billion a year while covering everybody. That's incredible. Do other studies generally support the savings described in the Poland study, or is this an outlier?
We're in the process of reviewing all of the relevant economic studies of different single-payer plans in the United States and in the individual states, and almost all of them show savings similar to what the Poland group found, although not necessarily the savings around fraud and waste.
Can you tell us more about your review process? Why are you doing it? How many studies are you reviewing? And how are you defining which studies to look at?
So we did this study because of the confusion, as your earlier questions indicated, that people have about reconciling different studies, some of them done well, some of them not so well, some based on this single-payer plan, some based on another single-payer plan, using different analytic techniques. And we really wanted to figure out what all of these studies taken together tell us about the anticipated costs of single-payer. So what we did is searched for studies, economic studies, of the cost of single-payer by looking online, in medical databases, looking at existing lists of studies, and we gathered the studies, and we're currently up to 20 studies, still analyzing a few more, and we characterized each study by what the features of the single-payer plan were and how the analysis was done. For example, we noted whether or not they included the savings from simplified administration or from getting lower drug prices. And what we found, as I said earlier, is that almost all of the studies, all but three, found that single payer would save money right out of the blocks, right in the first year. And that's because the savings from administrative costs and lower drug prices and other savings exceed the increase in utilization. The few studies that didn't show that, one of them had a very luxurious benefit package, which is not like any other single-payer plan is proposing, and a couple of studies didn't include any kinds of significant savings.
And when will it be published?
We are currently getting reviews of the work, finalizing later this year or early 2019.
You have said we can save money and cover more people. You also say single-payer could improve medical care. Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. Well, in at least three ways. First of all, everyone will have really good coverage. So the current problem we have is that people who are uninsured or who have, for example, a very high deductible and therefore are underinsured may not have the ability to go see a doctor when they need to. There are, in the jargon of the field, there are access problems due to financial barriers. So that will go away. No more access problem due to financial barriers. Second, because people will have free choice of doctors, they won't be locked in to a particular network of doctors who have contracted with an insurance company. People will choose their doctors based on their satisfaction with the care they're getting, including their perceptions of the quality of care. And so we believe that people will tend to gravitate to providers who provide high-quality care, and those providers who maybe aren't providing the best quality care will begin to move in the direction of providing better quality in order to keep their patients. So it's a technique that empowers individuals to vote with their feet and to therefore convince providers to provide the best possible services. Third, and this is also really important, right now doctors spend a lot of their day dealing with the complexity of medical billing. They're not happy about that. They didn't go to medical school and pick this profession in order to be dealing with insurance companies and spend many hours a day, including many after the workday, on the computer dealing with information for billing purposes. Under single payer, all of that will be greatly simplified. That's why we have the administrative savings. But it will, aside from the monetary savings, it will free up providers to focus on patient care, which is why they're in the field in the first place. So the system, by being simpler, will empower doctors to do the best job they can, and that will improve quality. Actually, a fourth item. I did allude to this earlier. Right now, the data that we have available on care patterns comes from many different data sources. It might be some data from Aetna, if you can get your hands on it, some from Medicare, some from Medicare Advantage, some from Medicaid. And these data sets are often coded differently. They're hard to combine. You end up looking at only a small subset of all individuals, or you deal with sort of uncertainty in the data. But under single payer, all of the encounter data, all of the clinical encounter data, which will have the patient's ID, their complaint, their diagnosis, their tests, their treatment, all of that will be in one place, in one format. And from a geeky health services researcher perspective, the hat which I often wear, that's just a godsend to have all of this really clean, comprehensive data to be able to look at care patterns and to begin to tease out where there might be fraud or waste or just bad practices. So there are many different reasons to expect that quality of care will improve. And this may explain why in all of the European countries where everyone is covered and the data systems are standardized and much simpler than ours, that they live longer. There are many reasons, perhaps lifestyles among that, but certainly the ability to provide higher quality care and to better monitor what's going on in healthcare contributes to that.
I see. So just to summarize, the Healthy California Act would not cost Californians $400 billion a year. It would actually save Californians $38 billion a year. And not only that, single payer would improve the quality of our healthcare in four ways. One, it would assure that everybody is covered and covered well, which would be better than having millions of uninsured and underinsured people like we have now. Two, it would make it possible for patients to see doctors based on the quality of care they provide, not because of the provided network they're in. Three, single payer would free up time for doctors to provide patient care rather than spending hours dealing with insurance paperwork. Four, it would make it easier to compare the effectiveness of clinical treatments because the record keeping would be standardized. That would make it easier for researchers to figure out which treatments work best. Well, Dr. Khan, we certainly look forward to your analysis, and we also look forward to you joining us on our next podcast as we talk more about how insurance and administrative costs impact our healthcare.
Well, thank you very much for talking with me today. I hope that the information I could provide is useful for the podcast listeners, and I look forward to Chapter 2.
That's it for today's Heal California podcast. If you've liked what you've heard, please share, follow, and like us on Twitter and Facebook. Subscribe to our email updates at heal-ca.org. This is a project of the California One Care Education Fund. I'm Edward Barrera.